Welcome to the Inspired Intentions podcast with Skyterra Wellness. If you've been too busy and not taking care of yourself, it's time to reset habits and plunge into your new normal. I'm your host, Jeff Ford, and I am joined today with my incredible co-host, Alan Broyhill.
Hey.
What's up, Alan?
Nothing much, man.
Love your hat, bro.
Thanks.
Looks so great on you.
It's
really,
a good...
really brings out, like, accentuates your ears.
I think it's the way the bill's bent.
Yeah.
It's a little flatter.
Yeah. And there's like a nice, you know, subtle curve to it, though, like on one side.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. How's the chocolate covered espresso beans that you've been chomping on
I knew you were gonna bring those up. They're delicious. If you guys have never had a chocolate covered espresso bean, you need to try it. These were a Valentine's Day gift from a guest here on campus.
Oh,
super sweet, right?
We just have really sweet.
We have the best guests.
Yeah, we do. We do. We love our guests. And since we are here on the podcast again in our show format, we're gonna kick things off with a question and answer. Alan, who's gonna be the one answering today? Do you know?
It's actually going to be me.
Yeah.
I don't even get to ask the question today.
No, we've pulling Alan out of the responsibility of that. And since this is a question that I have no ability to answer, we're going to go ahead and ask it to Mr. Alan Broyhill. So, Alan, this was a question. It came in from the great state of Texas.
Okay.
From Susan. And so what we're looking for here is, what recommendations do you have on both sizes and brands of backpacks for women, specifically women, who are taking part in half-day hikes?
Got it. Well, this question really works for men and women, even if it is just targeted, like the question came targeted for women. Yeah, I mean, you could go into super depth, super detail on this. You can be as picky as you want, but if we're just talking about a half day to a whole day, little outing excursion, you can break it down pretty simply. So really the whole thing starts with the fit, more so about the size. So even if something is the size that you in your brain want, if it doesn't fit well, it doesn't make sense. So often backpacks are fitted, in liters, like measured in liters. So
I thought that was just how water was measured.
They measure backpacks for whatever reason. Unless you're in Europe, then it's like cubic whatever.
But okay,
liters. So like average, if you're like, I want a 30 liter, but a 30 liter doesn't fit your body type, maybe go with 28, maybe go with a 32. But as far as sizing goes, it all starts with the hip belt. You work from the hip belt up, make sure the hip belt fits, because that's going to hold like around 80% of the weight of the bag. Then you go to the shoulder straps, and then your load bearers at the top, which bring the top of the bag towards the back of your head, and then the sternum strap. So you put a bag on, put some stuff in it, make sure all that stuff kind of fits and looks good for you. And then that's really going to be based off of the liter size of the bag. So if you're like, oh, all this feels really good in this style of bag, it's got a nice good frame to it, perfect. Then you can kind of say, well, it feels like it's a little bit smaller, it's a little bit bigger, but the fit feels right. Then you can go with something a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger. So as far as a specific liter goes, for a half day, whole day, I would say somewhere between a 28 to 36.
Okay.
28 to 36.
Now, someone searching in a store would be able to find that on the label of the backpack?
Yeah, 100%. So usually it's even like in the stitching on the backpack, like wherever the logo is on the bag, it'll say like, you know, 28 Osprey or Deuter 32 or whatever. And then it might even have like the model name of the bag. So those are a couple of my recommendations for brands too. So I've been carrying a Deuter bag, which is a German company, since I was like 16 years old. I had the same one, finally wore it out essentially over a period of 12.
How do you say the company again?
Deuter.
Deuter.
I'm probably
Deuter. Okay.
Deuter. I don't have a good German accent, but those bags are really awesome. I then switched to an Osprey. That's the one I carry on all our hikes here, and Osprey's a really great brand. Those are just two that I've had a ton of experience with. I carry a 36 liter on a daily basis for all our guests. My old Deuter bag was a 32. If somebody's looking for like they're only going to be doing a couple hours, you might be able to lean towards that like 26 liter. But really just going through that little sizing guide I gave you and making sure that the fit's right, because if it's not comfortable wearing it around for a test, it won't be comfortable wearing it for a long time out in the field. So making sure that fit's good and then picking your size based off of that.
Makes sense. Would you recommend guests when they maybe go to a store, like try it on and then like actually like put stuff in it and make sure that they know that they're not like shoplifting, like they're not like like when they're there or
stuffing all their stuff in it? Yeah, that's a great way to get the fit right for sure. Like start with the
test
hip belt.
Those straps.
Yeah, test the straps. Start with that hip belt, like I said, work your way up to the sternum strap. Make sure the fit's right, 100%. If you're ordering online, you know, they try to do their best on the websites, but it's never, you're never going to know until you put some stuff in it and you put it on your back.
Nice.
For sure.
So we're looking at 26 to 36 liters.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. If you're wanting more equipment, more rain gear, maybe lean towards the 36. If you're really minimalistic, lean more towards the 26.
Gotcha. And top brands, free commercials today, Deuter.
Good.
Yeah. And Osprey.
Yeah. Those Very are my cool. recommendations.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Alan. I think Susan from Texas is going to be stoked with your responses. And listeners, we look forward to hearing what backpacks you do purchase for the half-day hikes that I know each of you are going to be participating in real soon. So what else are we talking about today? We have an exciting episode today for the main segment, and it's going to be all about how depression impacts motivation. Mm. What we've been seeing on campus is folks do not feel the same. Their moods are different. And we want to normalize feelings of depression because at any time in life, we may stumble into this place. And so what we're going to be doing is bringing on three experts, mental health experts, three therapists today to help us explore how we can make progress when our mood shifts.
Yeah, it's so important. It's so important. And it's not something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast, so it's about time.
Yeah, long overdue. Stick around.
And then right after that, we have another awesome 5-minute focus with Jeff, actually all about motivation. We're on episode number 4 of our 5-minute focus motivation series. So stick around at the end for that. And we hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Hey, listeners, I am in a very uncomfortable situation right now. I am in a room with three mental health professionals, and we are here to talk about the connection between depression and motivation. And without further ado, I want to introduce the folks who are making me uncomfortable because of their seasoned skill set around this topic. And in the booth, we have back with us none other than Executive Director of SkyTerra Embrace, Greg.
Hey, Jeff. It's so good being back. It's been a good minute.
Yeah.
Super excited to have
how's
my
the,
folks.
How's the headset? Is it still fitting the head okay?
Solid. Head gets bigger. Headset stays fine.
So we're good. We're grateful to have you back, Greg. Yeah. Why do you think it's important to talk about the connection between depression and motivation today?
Oh, man. Like the more work I do for myself and then the work I do with clients and individuals, it's becoming much more apparent that the last 10 years have been brutal, and then we really pull in the COVID, the effects of COVID, like
yeah.
what it's really created for each of us, what it's really meant for each of us, and then how we've all navigated it. Man. It's been very individualized.
Well, I like that perspective. I think we can speak into that mm-hmm. and normalize that we all went through the pandemic and it affected us in ways that we did not
yeah.
realize until today.
Absolutely.
So thanks for being here, Greg.
Of course.
You do look good in that headset. Love
Thank
the
you.
Colored shirt today. You can't see him, but he's looking great. And we have none other than our Director of Behavioral Health at SkyTerra Wellness. Shalom.
Hi, everyone. If you've been here over the past 6 months, I've met you. If not, I can't wait to meet you. And it's good to be here, Jeff.
Yeah, welcome, Shalom. We're pumped to finally get you in the booth. How's the nerves? You doing good? You excited?
I'm doing okay right now.
Well, let's get your perspective real quick before we dive in and introduce our final professional. What do you want to explore when you think of this connection between depression and motivation? Why do you think it's important?
There's a huge stigma behind it. And I think, especially with the Olympics, you know, when we saw Simone Biles say out loud, "I can't go through with this because of my mental health."
Oh, wow.
That was a huge thing for the world to see and to connect that of like, it's not that she can't do it. It's just mentally she's not there. So the motivation was literally not there. And I think that was something that the world could say, oh my gosh, like I've been there and I've been in that spot where I was too afraid to do something. But because I was afraid, that stigma that we have behind mental health, went through with it and we, you know, either messed up really bad or it was just not a good idea. So I think, again, the world watching that has been an eye opener. So that's why I think it's important to discuss this.
That's a great example. I think what you're speaking to is that everybody goes through something like this. Mm-hmm. And I think we place such expectations on ourselves when we feel a certain way that we shouldn't feel that way. And I'm really excited to let all three of you speak to the world on that today. So without further ado, at this point, we have one more guest in the booth. She's been patiently waiting. And we have none other than SkyTerra Embrace's clinical director, Jen.
Thanks, Jeff. It's good to be here. And really excited to discuss this topic because it's important. Over the last 10 years with the work that I've done with children, adolescents, young adults, and their families, I think it's been really important to open up the conversation around depression, anxiety, and as you had mentioned, to normalize it and to let individuals know that they're not alone in their experience, they're not alone in their challenges, and that there is help and light at the end of the tunnel.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that perspective. I keyed into the word you used, open, Jen, and I think that's so powerful and why this topic is going to help many of our listeners at home to not only open themselves to new perspectives on mental health, but open themselves to this understanding that motivation and depression, it's very much connected. And so let's go ahead and dive into just some quick definitions of like, what is depression? Because I think the world sees it in a certain light. And I want to get the perspective from the professionals, folks who deal with this every day, one-on-one, in groups. So Greg, what's your definition of depression?
Man, this has been one of those pieces that I've always wanted to put words to, and it's always been more of the visceral and physiological experience that someone's had. But in simple terms, it's going to be the feeling down, feeling sad, feeling discouraged, feeling overwhelmed. But there are so many pieces and different words that come into this that would also be a separate or unique visceral experience for everyone. You know, when you talk about grief, we talk about loss, we talk about frustration, it's all part of that depression piece. And it's such an individualized experience that I don't think there is just one definition for it.
It sounds like what you're saying is everybody experiences depression differently, mm-hmm. due to experiences and feel different emotions within the depression.
Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely. Yeah, that's quite interesting. I look forward to exploring that a bit more. Shalom, what's your definition of depression?
So I would go with, you know, obviously what Craig is saying, and then obviously like the effects of an individual, how it's affecting them negatively, mm-hmm. and in the way that they feel. So, you know, feelings come and go, and it's something that it's a roller coaster. Yeah. And it's something that we need to learn how to deal with, how to sit with in the moment versus just trying to push it away and say, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a bad day. Put it behind me. Because then the depression is going to grow more and more on a daily basis. And one day.
It seems like that's something that can commonly happen with depression. Yes. It's like, oh, it's just that bad day and I'm going to push it under. Mm-hmm. Where what you're saying is if it's affecting the person negatively, mm-hmm. then those feelings are, you know, rooted in depression.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And again, you know, that can turn into long lastings of severe feelings of sadness, hopelessness, and loss of interest in activities. So that's connected to the motivation part where, you know, the more that we get into this loop or triangle of depressive feelings, the more that we're going to see less motivation in a person.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for the definition. A little more Webster-y there than Greg. It sounds like you conferred with Greg.
I just got through school not too long ago.
Yeah. That works. Well, this is what's so great when we ask a question like that is to get different perspectives so that listeners can understand that everybody's going to look at this in a little bit different way. And once we can key in on how you connect to it, we can start to take steps that move us out of maybe the negative impacts of mm-hmm. depression.
Yeah.
So Jen, we will definitely switch up the order. We'll let you go first eventually, promise. What's your definition of depression?
So adding on to what Greg and Shalom have already identified, I would also identify irritability and a shift in level of functioning. So we often see that individuals are sleeping significantly more or significantly less than they had previously, as well as shifts in eating patterns. So either eating less or eating more. And so those can be some indicators, not only to an individual, but also their loved ones, their natural supports, that there's something going on and someone may need some assistance, some support.
That's a great point. It sounds like signs of depression is changes in, you know, behavioral patterns and just changes in regular routines. Wow. Okay. Well, love the perspective from all three of you. Let's dive into how common this is. We've used this word normalized. So, Greg, maybe you take that one. How common is depression?
Well, I think like depression has evolved over time. You know, the definition of depression has evolved. The vulnerability of people being willing to express or identify that they do feel depressed has evolved. I think the openness, as Shalom was talking about with the stigma, you know, that has certainly transformed over time. But we're seeing it much more prevalent today because of the openness, because of the ability to really identify the changes that I'm experiencing in my day-to-day habits that do impact how I feel, how I engage with others.
Do you mean folks are becoming more aware that this is happening?
Yeah. I certainly wouldn't say it's people are being more depressed now because of life, which I think
it's like always been there.
It's kind of the stigma is that, oh, kids are more depressed. Adults are more depressed now because they're sleeping more and they're avoiding more. Mm-hmm. But the reality is I'm just willing to address it now, where like we have the athletes and we have the authors and the researchers. And I focused my professional time on trauma, attachment, addiction. And all three of those components come together with the habits and the Webster style approach to what the definition is of depression. And we're seeing that like the numbers are kind of staggering because more older adults are being diagnosed with depression because they're the ones that are talking about it.
Yeah.
And followed by young adults and then adolescents and children. Because of fear, because of uncertainty, because I don't know how people are going to receive me or respect me. I don't know how I'm going to navigate it. But as you gain experience in life and you grow up, you're able to normalize that visceral experience where when you're young, you don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And then as you're an adult, you figure out what it means over time, but it's all about the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting perspective. It sounds like adults are getting to this place where they're starting to face it head on and understand it. And it's almost like we can't have the expectation that younger folks, kids are actually going to fully understand how those feelings are manifesting.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the work that we do with kids today is helping them explore that and begin it, but they're so fragile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and their minds are so, I'm gonna say fragmented and distracted by everything around them that any of those feelings they can justify for something else. They can, and a lot of students go to anxiety. It's like the young adults, the adults, it's anxiety, it's not depression. And that's kind of where the focus is for a lot of individuals. And so to normalize it says you can have both. Mm-hmm. You can have neither. You can have one or the other, and you might have something else. Yeah. But we always go towards the medical approach to mental health and a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. If you see a therapist, there's something wrong with you. If you have to go to the doctor and get medication, there's something wrong with you. And if one med doesn't work, then something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
And it becomes this very personalized experience of what's okay and what's not. And then nothing feels okay. And where that's that fear that children and then young adults feel, where adults have that more experience, whether they're parents or their partners or whatever that looks like for them, where they have been able to explore that and normalize and almost depersonalize the attack that society has on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not make it part of their identity like we tend to see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Let's kind of flip it over to Jen. And this is something that Greg alluded to earlier on in our conversation. About the pandemic and how it's affected all of our moods. And I really appreciated the word you used, Jen, irritability. I think that's an interesting link to depression that not everyone maybe may fully grasp. Mm-hmm. And so kind of a dovetail off of, okay, pandemic, it's affect our moods. Like, how have you seen it affect our moods?
Well, it's been really interesting for me over the last 2 years of this pandemic at this point that I have been working actively in the field of mental health throughout the duration of the 2 years. So as a mental health professional, I was deemed an essential worker and have been out and seeing and working with depression on a daily basis. And so initially there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of concern of what's to come and not really knowing what to anticipate. There was the initial isolation where individuals were cut off from friends, from family, from activities that they had been engaging in a daily on a daily basis, to all of a sudden being at home. And then if you add on any challenges in family dynamics, so all of a sudden you're immersed in spending every day day with family
that
members.
Changes things.
Exactly. And so if there, if there was some conflict there, or if there was miscommunication or lack of connection, that was then exacerbated. So what I saw was a lot of individuals that were isolating. They were spending most of their day in their bedrooms on technology, seeking connection through technology and not really finding it in a way that was meaningful to them.
Yeah.
Seeing individuals that were really struggling and not quite sure what to do or how to ask for help or even the certainty that they needed help and support. So I think as things have started to open up once again, as individuals have been able to reconnect with community, with friends, to get outside, to start to reconnect with some of those previous interests and passions, it's continued to feel a little bit uncertain, and there's some trepidation of, oh, how do I approach this? And that's where some of the social anxiety comes up, that it's a difference to have a conversation face to face over direct messaging through technology. And being able to read social cues and facial expressions has presented another layer of challenge for adolescents, for young adults, for their families.
That's an incredible perspective. It's almost like the way we've been communicating over the last 2 years is not actually like how we typically communicate.
Yeah.
And that causes another challenge, like you're saying. What I really keyed on Jen is that, wow, okay, well, we have seen that the pandemic caused isolation. It caused the unknown and uncertainty to be ever present. And it's still present from what I'm hearing from you. And that family dynamics piece, super interesting. It's like, wow, when I spend more time around the people I love, some things might become a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Or some things might be even more awesome. So it's like, wow, that it's like, what's so interesting about this is nobody was given a warning sign from a mental health perspective.
Right.
Like, it's like, okay, things are shutting down. And like, hey, maybe we should ask some questions and set some goals around how can we take care of our mental health during these types of circumstances. So we know it's happened. This is where we are. We can't change the past. We want to move forward and figure out how do we, if we are depressed or if we are experiencing social anxiety, how do we move away from that and live the life we want to live? So
Hello, Inspired Intentions listeners. It's Rachel here.
And Lindsay.
And we are so excited because we have a sneak peek for you of Alumni Week, which will be May 1st through May 8th of this year.
Yes. So I was actually just talking with Mitchell the other day and we were laying out the schedule, and just some things to look forward to is the Epic Fitness Challenge. So three different parts there. Alan Broyhill will be leading the charge on some outdoor challenges, survivor style.
Ooh.
Yeah. Survivor style. And then we've got Peter, our executive chef, that will be leading a chef, like a cook-off, like a secret ingredient cook-off.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. And then creative arts will be on the schedule. Lots of fun things. We can't give you all too much because there's some exciting things in the mix. I will say, though, there's going to be a pickleball event.
Of course.
Yes. So a pickleball event and maybe cornhole.
Of course.
Yes. So there's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
So much fun. And we have fewer than 5 spots left for that week. Just a reminder, you have to have stayed with us for at least one visit before. And we look forward to seeing you there.
We sure do.
Bye.
Shalom, I think this is a good segue. How does depression get in the way of motivation?
Ooh.
Big question.
Yeah. And, kind of going off by what Jen said, when the pandemic hit, we kind of all just hit survival mode. We were just trying to survive in that moment of, you know, teaching our kids our home at home, doing all the things that we were used to doing, you know, stepping out of our routine, out of our patterns. And as we know, even adults need that structure. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we were all just surviving in that, in what was that, 2 years, however yeah, many years it's been.
2 years. Yeah.
And now we're seeing the aftermath. Mm-hmm. Of, okay, I no longer have to survive. Now I need to deal with everything that I have been pushing back or, you know, holding down or not allowing to come out into light and telling everybody, like, what am I struggling with? So, yeah, we definitely see, like, difficulty in concentration. So this makes it really hard to complete a task. So simple tasks that we used to be able to do on a daily basis, it's almost like, why do I have so much trouble just remembering my mm-hmm. to-do list?
Why is it so hard to do this?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of coping skills around that, that talking to a third party, AKA a therapist.
good plug.
It's, you know, it's very beneficial to do because mm-hmm. people are tired. You know, friends don't want to talk about this. Your mom doesn't want to talk about this with you. Mm-hmm. That's why it's beneficial to have a professional in this field to say, you know, validating you, what you felt the past 2 years, like, you're not crazy. It's just something that happened that we had zero, like, heads up, and we just had to get through it. And now we just need to deal with what's going on in our individual selves. So definitely, you know, it can cause, just again, yes. So it definitely, you know, gets in the way of motivation when you cannot complete that to-do list or even have the sense of what is my purpose today. You're constantly thinking, I just don't want to get out of bed. Or maybe I do get out of bed, but I'm just a walking zombie. Mm-hmm. I'm just going yeah. through the motions and, you know, trying to just get through today in order to make it to tomorrow. And that's where we see the depression just get deeper and a little worse, obviously. But again, this is why us as mental health professionals exist. Like, yeah. we are here.
Yeah. And it's why we're speaking into this.
Yes.
Today, because I think we've highlighted at a high level that the pandemic has led to depression. Mm-hmm. And now the depression has led to these feelings that we are just no longer motivated. We are starting to identify that this is, like, almost our new normal.
And I want to real quick jump back and make sure that everyone is aware that depression has always been here. It has not been a cause, like, the COVID has not created depression. We've always had it. But again, now it's a little more real, I think, because we've had time to feel it. We've had time to explore it. And I think when you're talking, Shalom, one reason parents and friends don't want to talk about it is because they're also experiencing it. Let's normalize that piece real quick.
And if I can jump in, I also want to point out that depression is a mental health diagnosis, and we also experience the feeling of depression on a daily basis. That mm-hmm. is within the normal, the typical range of human experience. And so if one feels depressed today, that does not necessarily mean that they are experiencing depression as a mental health diagnosis.
Yeah. Great point, Jen.
Yeah.
And I think it's always important that when we have a challenge in life, to know that that challenge can happen on a small level and it can happen on a larger level.
Absolutely.
And now, since we know what depression is, how the pandemic has impacted all of us and where we are today, we know our motivation is low. What can our listeners start to do now that you three have normalized this? So maybe let's kick it to Greg first.
Yeah.
We've got a listener out there and they're feeling these effects.
Yeah.
Maybe it is on a small level. Maybe it's on a high level. What can they do?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that I love encouraging people to do is feel all the feels, meaning let it happen. We're not trying to brush under the rug and say, hey, I'm not feeling depressed, as Shalom talked about earlier.
You're saying acknowledge it.
Absolutely. Be aware. Increase the sight of what's happening so that you can change. Because until you see it, there's nothing you can do about it. And then once you see it, it might be that dark cloud in the sky that's totally creating this difficult time for you. And then motivation is one of those little wisps of air that comes through and says, I do have hope. And I think it's really important to say that we can have both at the same time. Motivation might be lower and depression might be greater, but as we figure out what we like doing, developing hobbies, slowing down, being able to engage in something, then the motivation almost is invited in the depression in to join. Yeah. Like the motivation's all about doing something. Depression's all about not doing something.
Ooh.
And so the motivation has to be active. So you have to be trying to do something, and then the depression is invited in, and then it starts engaging, and then it will shrink.
And it sounds like as you're trying, don't be so hard on yourself and don't have judgment around it. Because if I like, y'all can't see Greg in the booth here, but he's using his hands
a lot,
quite frequently in a powerful way. Because I think we're looking at this as like creating balance between these two worlds of depression and motivation.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you're out of balance. And as you take small steps that start to feed the motivation, like hobbies, as Greg's saying, we start to kind of realign the two common feelings that we have that just happen to be on different sides of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's take one step back and then we'll do some further action steps. Like, what is motivation? So I don't know which of our experts feels most comfortable in answering that, but Jen, maybe like you could take this. Like, what's motivation, first of all?
I would define motivation as the desire to do something.
Nice.
Anything.
Anything.
To do anything at all.
Desire to do anything at all. Shalom, would you add anything to that?
I would definitely say that, you know, motivation plays a big role in an individual as far as just productivity, the quality, and the speed of work.
Mm. Love that. And you mentioned earlier, like, concentration.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, when you're able to concentrate and probably fully be present, that's probably a positive sign that you are motivated, you are, you know, in a stronger place motivationally.
And that's what I often tell my clients. I say, you know, we have a to-do list that's a mile long, but we just have to be present. So right now you are meant to be here sitting with me. So instead of thinking about everything else or worrying about anything else or, you know, have concerns about all the things that are going on in the world, I say just be present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like that word, present. Great. Well, thanks for that brief step back. I just want to be clear, like, what we're talking about between those two spectrums that Greg has visually kind of painted for us. So other steps. It's so important that on the Inspired Intentions podcast, we re-inspire folks to take action and to move forward with specific things that they can do if they're feeling this way in this particular conversation. So Greg has mentioned that hobbies, even getting back to things that bring you joy, is a good starting point.
Yeah.
How about for you, Shalom? Like, if you're helping someone to gain more motivation and to lower feelings of depression, what's some action steps that you would provide for them?
Yeah.
Or recommend?
One of the things that I always ask people is about their support group at home. Because I, you know, there's a difference between clinical depression and then just feeling sad. But either way, you're going to need accountability and just a support group. So leaning on those people who are important to you and letting them know, like, I am having feelings of sadness and I'm going to need you to, you know, help me pep up and at least go for a walk with you or whatever it is.
Would you suggest it's someone they trust, someone they have a strong relationship with?
Yeah. And again, it goes back to, you know, accept it. Don't push it away. Greg mentioned this earlier, like, one of the things that we do very well as humans is say, yep, this is here. It's been here my whole life, or maybe it just popped up 5 years ago, but I'm just going to keep pushing it away and keep trying to move forward. Sit with that feeling. That's actually one of the things that I teach here in our self-care class. As far as allowing yourself to feel all the feels and finding the root of that. And of course, if you are, you know, at a point of sadness, what is causing that? And if you yourself can't figure it out, again, go see a professional that can help you talk through it, walk through it with you and see and try to find the root of it. Again, keep it in mind to do one task at a time. One of the things that I often hear is, well, I need to do this, this, this in order to get to point A. And it's like, let's just work on one thing. And I know you've mentioned this to clients here at SkyTerra when they have like, you know, 100 goals, and it's like, let's work on one thing at a time. And it's the same thing for mental health. Like when you're focusing on your mental health, focus on one thing at a time. When we just put all our problems together, it's going to be very hard to look at it individually and actually try to take care of what's going on now.
You're saying it could be overwhelming if someone who's feeling depressed starts to try to do too much.
Yeah. And if I see that I have all these problems, I'm going to say, why even start? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just one thing at a time.
I think a lot of folks start to identify with their problems, and that just kills motivation when you think about it. Because we are not our behaviors. That is not true. And that's something that we've spoken about in our motivation series that hopefully our listeners key in on at the end of this episode. So Jen, kicking it over to you. We've heard that getting back to hobbies that bring joy, acknowledging and accepting the feelings, and then finding the root. Also, accountability and support mm-hmm. is incredibly helpful. And then, of course, like seeking a professional to help you navigate moving through this. What else would you recommend, Jen?
I would stress the importance of self-care and self-compassion. So really being kind to yourself, whether that is treating yourself to a massage or spending time with a loved one, taking your dog for a walk, finding those activities that really bring you joy and allow you to be kind to yourself. And that can be, again, creating a meal for yourself, your favorite meal. That can be getting outside in nature, especially as the weather is starting to get a little bit warmer. Being kind, finding that compassion.
Yeah, I like this tip on getting outdoors, because before we were jumping on to the podcast this morning, Shalom was mentioning SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And that is something that can often lower serotonin levels. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that we understand that the sun is powerful and being outdoors is where we're meant to be from a self-care and mental health perspective. It brings so much good to our life. Wow. So these are some incredible steps, and I think very helpful for our listeners. How I'd like to wrap up our conversation today is giving you each the floor to speak into our listeners one last time. So Greg, what do you want our listeners to remember?
I want all of you to remember to start now, and it's okay to feel all the feels, and we can still move forward.
Shalom.
I would say just remember you're not going through this alone, and you are not the only one battling with these thoughts and feelings. So just know that there is help out there.
And Jen?
Be patient and kind to yourself.
Wow. You know what? We're going to have to do this more often. Three mental health professionals in the booth. One, make me very uncomfortable. And two, provide a lot of value to folks out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for our time together today. Thanks so much, Shalom, Greg, Jen.
Absolutely.
Pretty great. And if y'all could start thinking about what we want to speak into for our next episode, Can't wait to have you all back into the booth.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Listeners, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us. And Greg, what's your cell phone number so listeners can directly reach out?
Yeah, it's 726. Just kidding.
Please also stay tuned for our motivation 5-minute focus. It's number 4 in our series. And we hope it gets your focus right for the rest of this week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey listeners, let's get your focus right for the rest of the week. In our last focus, we spoke into the fact that your expectations may be the very reason that you're lacking motivation. Today, we are talking about the belief you have in yourself and its connection to motivation. Long story short, if you don't believe in yourself, there is no way motivation can ever remain at a high level. Think about it like this. You kind of want to do this thing, but deep down, you really don't believe that you can do it. It might be attending 3 fitness classes a week or decreasing your alcohol consumption. The problem is there's this voice in your head that keeps telling you, why are you even trying? you won't be able to do it anyway. The voice becomes detrimental to motivation because every time you try to do this thing that you can't get motivated to do, you get in your own way. You say to yourself that you won't be able to do it. This is central to parenting. Ask your kids to try something, and oftentimes, they've already made up their mind. For example, think about asking a child to try a certain food. I experienced this just last night with my daughter Mia, my 2-year-old. I said, "Try the broccolini, Mia. You'll like it." She immediately responded, "No," in 2-year-old fashion. She already held the belief that she wasn't going to like it. And because of this belief, she didn't even try it. When you discover that your lack of motivation is because you don't believe in yourself, start by reflecting on past achievements. Ask, what challenging goal or goals have you achieved when you weren't so sure of yourself either? Remind yourself that you did it then and you can do it again. This is the quick fix. Now, the long-term solution, let's take some advice from mindset and productivity coach Liz Huber. She says to identify your limiting beliefs and replace these beliefs with empowering ones. What are your limiting beliefs? Well, they're the subconscious thought patterns that guide your actions and decisions. Thought patterns that in most cases hold you back. For example, you unconsciously believe that you are undisciplined. Inadvertently, this is an underlying belief that you are not aware of, and it consistently gets in your way of actually doing what you want to do. Now, an empowering belief that you could aim at building in this situation is that no matter what, you always do what you say you are going to do. You know how to execute. Now, upgrading to a new set of empowering beliefs doesn't happen overnight. But when you groom them, you start living life with subconscious confidence. You approach situations believing that you're going to win, not lose. Believing that it will be a success, not a failure. What I want you to do next is to identify what belief is holding you back. Ask yourself, is it valid or simply made up? Maybe it's just a song you've been playing in your head. When identifying this belief, start thinking the opposite. This is where empowering beliefs begin. Assure yourself that when you change this belief, your motivation will follow. Remember this, subconscious limiting beliefs are powerful. They're getting in your way. Don't let them decrease your motivation any longer. Thank you for listening today. We hope you enjoyed the show. We've got a brand new series coming out soon, so make sure you're listening every Monday because we are punctual. Our executive producer believes in doing what he says he's going to do. This has been the Inspired Intentions podcast, a production of Sky Terror Wellness Retreat. Special thanks to our executive producer, Alan Broyhill, who does always do what he's going to say. Please send us your questions and comments to inspiredintentions@skyterrawellness.com. And if you go to skyterraathome.com, our website with a ton of free resources, we've most recently launched a brand new online nutrition program. Check it out. You can sign up. We look forward to having you join us next week as we cut through the unrealistic noise on diets and fitness and show you how healthy living fits seamlessly into your already busy life. Thanks for listening.